Welcome to the Smart Green Energy Transition podcast. This is a Smarter Grid Solutions production and is our contribution to the search for impactful solutions to the climate challenge. This podcast will focus on smart decentralized energy solutions, a crucial but underreported part of the net zero carbon transition. We'll explore topics such as decentralized renewable energy developments, smart grid integration solutions, required system flexibility, customer empowerment, community enablement, and local energy markets.
I'm Graham Ault, Executive Director at Smarter Grid Solutions, and I'm joined by co-hosts Ben Curley, Project Manager, also at Smarter Grid Solutions.
Hi there.
Today we're looking at the role that distribution wires utilities can play in the clean energy transition and how their innovations can support their customers and the system as a whole in achieving net zero carbon goals. And we're joined by Scott Matheson, Director of Planning and Regulation at SP Energy Networks, one of the six distribution utilities in the UK. Scott, welcome and thanks for joining us.
Delighted to be here. Good afternoon, Graham.
Could you perhaps, just to get us going, give us a quick introduction to yourself and your organisation and your role in that?
Delighted to do so. So I have responsibility for network planning within the SP Energy Networks business. So I look at both transmission and distribution. Very much the business is at the forefront of making sure that we can deliver against net zero, every aspect of that, making sure that our system is cost effective, making sure that it's sustainable and environmentally secure, and making sure that we protect customers, both in terms of keeping the lights on, but in terms of public safety as well.
I wanted to start just by asking you about your personal motivations on climate. You know, so where does your motivation come from, you know, with power networks and with the climate agenda just now?
There's a couple of dimensions in terms of my response to that. First and foremost, I'm a father. So I have a daughter and a son. My eldest is currently making her way through university, and I hope that both of my children will see a bright future. And at the moment with the climate emergency, I'm deeply concerned about that. So I have a personal motivation with respect to making sure that those of my generation and before actually stand up to the responsibilities of those that are coming ahead of us and make sure that we have a world that is safe, secure and environmentally sound as we look forward. I think the other thing is, you know, ultimately I work in a utility. Yes, it's often looked at as being investor-owned and privately owned enterprise, but within the networks business in particular, we're very proud to be also a public service. Our guys are the guys that run out of doors when everybody's going inside in the bad weather and make sure the electricity's on. But increasingly, we are now looking forward to a responsibility in delivering against net zero and what we can facilitate.
And just picking up on that a bit further then, what sorts of things do SP Energy Networks aim for, and what sorts of programmes do you have in place that are related to climate change?
Yeah, that's the wonderful thing about my job is I get to see just about every aspect of it and planning for the network of the future. So I know we want to focus on distribution, but let's remember that since 2000, Scotland has been a leading powerhouse in terms of accommodating renewables. That started in our transmission business. You know, we now have about 11 gigawatts in Scotland for a winter peak demand, certainly in our area of about 4 gigawatts. So we've already had to innovate and think about how we make sure that we can accommodate more renewables than the grid was originally designed for, and make sure also that export capacity was upgraded. So that started, it swept then down into our distribution business. Very much it was about embedded generation in the distribution business, but now as we look forward, we see more and more electric vehicles and the potential changes that are happening in heat systems, source heat pumps, for example, that will increasingly put demand on the local domestic low voltage network that serves domestic customers, but also in the HV network that serves small businesses. And again, you know, we've got to balance the cost of delivering that system, which means getting more out of the existing system that we've got, as well as satisfying the demand, which I think will come on very quickly as customers want to be more sensitive and realise their own net zero ambitions.
What sorts of demand increase you expect to see from, you know, electrification of things like transportation, like you mentioned there, Scott?
I think that's really important. So we do see increasing aggregate demand. It's very easy to look at numbers and think the UK has been through a process of reducing demand. We've all tried to be more environmentally aware, and certainly since about 2009, 2010, we've seen a reduction in electricity demand of between 1% and 2% per annum. However, we will increasingly see that headroom eaten up as we look forward. You know, we see anything between 2 and 4% increase in demand per annum. But what really matters is what's happening locally within the network. So networks are designed to deal with certain peaks demands. So what really matters is where and when that demand and that risk is going to be placed on the local networks that we have within our customer communities. Whilst there is headroom on the higher voltages on our network, to make more use of the capacity. Once you get down into the domestic network, as I would describe it, that same flexibility doesn't exist, and we're going to have to be really smart about how we operate the grid. I don't think that pricing signals will work on their own. We're going to have to operate the grid very differently and think about different control systems that complement customer behaviour and demand.
Moving swiftly on then to focus on SP Energy Networks, as you've introduced there, some of the things that your organisation's doing. I think it's worth diving a little bit deeper into that. You know, organisations around the country, around the world, are trying to grapple with huge challenges. What would you say SP Energy Networks organisation mission is in relation to climate change?
You know, I believe that electricity can be a cost-efficient part of the solution to delivering against net zero in two key vectors that are increasingly important. I think when we look at the UK and Scotland's track record in addressing pollution from large thermal plant, I think we can be very proud of what we've done and the reduction in that and the growth in renewables. But we obviously have got the challenge ahead of us with respect to transport and heat. Now, electricity can be the solution to that. That's the bottom line. We see between now and 2030 that just within our area alone, there'll be 1.5 to 2 million electric vehicles that will need to be accommodated. And again, you know, about 1 to 1.5 million potential air source heat pumps that will need to be accommodated within domestic premises. So our mission is to make sure that that can be delivered in the timescales that our customers demand, that we can do it in a safe, secure, coordinated and reliable way. You know, electricity is a special product, but it is also a risky product if not well managed, and well licensed companies have got to be part of making sure that the customer can enjoy the demand that they place on that grid safely and securely. We've got to make sure it's cost effective and timely. You know, back to that point, is that it won't be the regulator Ofgem who will be determining when people want electric vehicles. It will be our customers, and our network will need to be there. And we need to make sure that the regulatory framework, which typically, historically, has looked at long lags in terms of decision making, we've even seen that work that we've done with smart grid solutions and things like active network management schemes, it's taken us time to get through those decisions. We can't operate at the timescales that we have historically. And that feeds into other areas like planning and consenting. But it also has to be managed cost effectively. We're a business that recovers its money over 45 years at very low rates of return. And again, franchised and heavily regulated. You know, me and my boss will be held to account if we do something wrong. That public accountability is an important part of these business. But pivotally, it's got to meet the net zero targets. And net zero targets are ultimately accelerating. Our mission is to make sure that as these targets accelerate, and we saw Scottish targets ahead of the GB government's targets, we saw increasing prescience of it from every climate change report that's come out from the CCC. But we've got to make sure that no community that we serve as a business, as a public service business as well, is left behind in that transition towards delivering net zero. I want to make sure that those who use public transport have access to electric buses in the same way that those that can afford private transports and afford their own charging arrangements can get access to that future as well. And that's a core advantage of what utility like SP Energy Networks can deliver in terms of the model that we operate within.
I was going to ask you about what unique resources, but given what you said about LV headroom and time pressure, it was maybe a deficit of resources in some ways. Do you think there are unique resources or a unique insight or unique ideas or skills that SP Energy Networks has that it can bring to bear on this?
There's no question about it. You know, I'm very proud of the fact that the business is customer-led, but I'm also very proud of the fact that we're an engineering business. We're ingenuitive and we listen carefully to our stakeholders. So it's one of the questions that you asked earlier, which I think is important, I touch on here as well, is, you know, what have we done in this area? So we've looked to invest in local communities through things like our Green Economy Fund. That was targeted at three areas. We wanted to look at modes of transport changing, and that was everything from e-bikes to electric buses. We've looked at changing heating systems, and we've also looked at the education area. As we move toward a net zero future, we're going to require new skills in the economy. And one of the things that we wanted to see was that the universities, the colleges, the schools within our area were responding to that transition towards net zero. We've also sought to use the engineers within our own business in conjunction with businesses like Smart Grid Solutions to look at what more can we do with the network that we have. So things like active network management, funded through our innovation scheme, are pivotal in making sure that we can accommodate within areas of relatively low demand, more embedded generation that can export to other areas of the network. Increasingly, we've looked to improve our modelling and forecasting capability. So we've developed our own net zero model platform that specifically looks at the impact of the uptake in terms of heat and transport systems on our low voltage network, whether that's in the centre of Liverpool or the centre of Glasgow or through in Edinburgh, whether that's in social housing environments or private housing environments. And we've used that to inform the business plan that we're putting forward at the moment for ED2, which will take effect on the 1st of April 2023. So for me, good engineering, ingenuitive engineering, is entirely consistent with serving the customer better and also delivering a net zero future.
That's fantastic, Scott. And do you think there are any particular projects or initiatives within SP Energy Networks that you'd highlight for particular attention?
Oh, there's a vast array of them. I'm going to pick out a couple of good examples. So again, you know, we, and I think this is important, I'll talk about it from an embedded generation perspective, but I think it's important in the context of the way that distribution networks are transitioning. So one of the first projects that we pioneered in conjunction with Smart Grid Solutions, and I'm kind of unashamed about calling the company out because it was groundbreaking in the whole of the UK, was the Accelerated Renewable Connection project, where we wanted to utilise the full thermal capacity available at one of our grid supply points and accommodate more embedded generation in an area with very, very low demand. Typically, within the Dunbar area, with the grid supply point that serves that area, we would have only got around about 60 megawatts of embedded generation onto that network. But working in conjunction with Smart Grid Solutions, we were able to develop an active network management scheme, a pilot scheme, that allowed us to get that up to over 100 megawatts. And you know why this is particularly important, the local demand in that area is about 2 megawatts. With a cement factory in that area on, it got up to the heady heights of about 12 megawatts. But that wasn't necessarily running, and things have changed with the Viridor capacity that's there now as well, but it's still very low demand in relation to the embedded generation area. All sorts of implication for grid exports as well. But the A&M scheme allowed us to bring that network into balance and realise the full thermal capacity in an appropriate risk-managed basis within that grid supply point. That meant that lights would stay on in the local area, that supplies were secure, we could satisfy more renewable ambition within that area, and we could manage the grid securely. Now, that was a great project. We've been out showcasing it with the regulator, with various parties, but it gave us the confidence then to expand into Dumfries and Galloway, where in a much bigger scale, we saw exactly the same issue. Again, working with Smart Grid Solutions on Dumfries and Galloway, where we're looking at a scheme that will allow us to manage circa 200 megawatts of capacity within that area effectively, again in an area of very low demand, where there's a very highly constrained transmission system as well, or of all sorts of risks in terms of just managing the overall operability of the system. Building on the success of that ongoing project, in our ED2 business plan, we have put forward 30 managed network zones within our business plan across both our Merseyside and North Wales network and our network in the Central Belt of Scotland. Now that will manage up to, in distribution's case, in the Central Belt of Scotland, 2 gigawatts of distributed energy resources, and in our Manweb business, somewhere around about 1 gigawatt. Now it's the gradual, starting from the small scale, proving the concept, getting confidence in the supplier, getting confidence in the innovation, extending that into a bigger project and then rolling that out across the network. That's been a really successful, innovative project that we've done in conjunction with yourselves. But we're also looking at data and information and how can we utilise networks better. So I'm also really proud of some of the work that some of my young engineers have done in things like Heat Up and EV Up, which are applications that allow us to look at the local building characteristics of areas that we serve, look at the thermal demand that will be placed on the local network in that area, look at the transition towards which of those areas are more likely to move towards heat pumps or electrification of transport, and what duty will that place in the grid, and how do we plan for that better and make better use of that flexibility. Now those are effectively apps, which my kids are more conversant than I ever am, but they're universally accessible by a vast range of stakeholders who also may be planning their assets, their infrastructure assets, round about the electricity network. They also help promote, I think sometimes people can forget about the electricity network. It could be a constraint or a potential barrier to people realising their ambition unless we coordinate planning better. And I think it's, you know, again, I don't want to trivialise these as apps. They're important data provision platforms and planning tools that are available for stakeholders that allow us to better coordinate infrastructure. And that's a key area of innovation within the grid. I'm also really proud of the work that we're doing in the commercial area. Again, we want to operate the grid more flexibly, and that means having different commercial relationships with our customers. There's a very traditional way to look at that is when the network gets into a jam in a post-fault situation, we might require our customers connected to the grid, industrial customers, to turn down their demand or act differently, and that would help us out. But what we've been increasingly looking to do is pre-fault flexibility tenders, which also sits alongside and complements our A&M strategy, where effectively we are buying ahead of need a thermal capacity, or we might also be buying a response to fault level management, for example, going forward. And we're looking at those pre-fault circumstances as well. So it's got to be both. Now, we're fairly unique in doing that as a distribution network operator. There's a lot of gigawatts out there in flexibility tenders, but most of them are in the post-fault market.
How would you say that SP Energy Networks and organisations like yourselves can lead and enable others to develop clean energy solutions?
Ben, it's not just a role for me, it's a responsibility. The networks are the heart of the transition that goes forward. And I come back to the point that, you know, in our heart, we're providing a service to the public that are connected into our grid. We have the advantage of being funded at low costs, which means that we can do that cost effectively and efficiently. But leadership is right at the heart of that. So we have been challenging, I believe, fundamentally believe that the existing regulatory framework, which was designed more than 3 decades ago now, it served us well, but it's not fit for the rate of change that we need to see in terms of grids and infrastructure going forward and the level of innovation that we need. And decisions need to come forward and happen much more quickly. So we've been challenging the regulator on things like anticipatory investment and making their decisions much more timely, or in a much more timeous fashion, in line with what we can see is demanded by stakeholders. You know, I'm yet to find the stranded asset the regulator is concerned about on the electricity system. Let me emphasise that right up front. What I can see, for example, in our transmission network, is that the forecast for constraint costs, because of the level of embedded generation and transmission connected generation coming forward, as constraints go up. So actually infrastructure as a delivery timeously and quickly with good decisions is in the best interest of the consumers. We're pushing that area. But equally, there's an implicit criticism of the regulator and the need to change there. I would also recognise that, you know, they have brought forward very good innovation schemes, and they're looking to modify those and make sure that we can deploy the innovations much more quickly and implement them. I think that's one of the challenges of the new approach that Ofgem are taking to innovation. But we've got to recognise that, you know, as a business, I'm really proud that if you look across transmission and our distribution business as a whole, we have had the most significant portfolio of innovation. Looking at those three areas, how do we operate the grid soundly and effectively and release more thermal capacity from the network? How do we operate different commercial arrangements that bring new parties into play that help us solve that grid? And how do we connect with the customer better through better data platforms and information and our stakeholders? So I think that's what we've got to continue to drive at going forward.
We're going to move on a little bit now. Clearly, we are recording this podcast in the context of the COP26 event coming up in Glasgow, hometown for SP Energy Networks and Smart Grid Solutions. And I know that you've got some responsibilities for the supplies for the event, but it wasn't really that we wanted to ask about. It was more about your hopes and expectations, what you think might come out of COP26, you know, how that will change things.
In this time in particular, it's so easy to be cynical or even sceptical about political event. You know, at least we're getting states like America to the table. We're getting Russia to join. They might not be here present, and we might all have views on whether or not they will respond in the way that we want them to. But they are going to join through multimedia and they're going to be part of that. So, you know, for the first time in a very long time, and let's not underestimate the power of having President Biden in town with respect to the political influence of this event, it is potentially very, very powerful indeed. I think what I'm more enthusiastic about is I see the level of engagement that actually comes out of young people in this debate. You know, I guess Greta Thunberg has led the way in the shining light, but increasingly there is a vast array of young voices actually seeking and demanding change from people of my age and my persuasion as well. And I think that will be amplified through this. I'm really proud that it's happening in my city. Clearly, there are some challenges at the moment with respect to some of what's going on in the press, and we can see that. We've got to manage our way through that. I'm sure that would have been the same whichever city it was occurring in at any point in time. We've got to negotiate our way through this. It's dead easy to say, and I know it's a word that's used, or it'll be a phrase that's used time and time again. The clock is against us. I feel pretty angry, if not impassioned, about the lack of rate and pace of change and what we need to do, and regulators and politicians and industry and society as well. There's always reasons to not do things. We've got to use this as a platform for changing that and get on and be bold and make some decisions about the networks that we want, about the generation that we want, about the renewables that we want, about the modes of transport and heat. This one really does matter. We're up against it, as we can see from the scientific projections and forecasts that are coming forward. I'm also hopeful that we have got to manage a safe and secure network. I will be out this week with our operations director, walking through the substation, the grid supply point, the interface between transmission and distribution, the primaries and secondaries that will be serving this area throughout this period. You know, it's a stark reminder of the importance that electricity plays in the functioning of an economy and the importance of it at a time like this as well. So I kind of get both hats on. I'm hopeful that the lights stay on throughout this period because we're doing all the right things. We're mobilising the right people. We've got a network that we've invested in. We've taken the right actions ahead of that. And I'm hopeful on the political stage that this has a big impact.
Are there any particular SP Energy Networks activities you wanted to highlight? You know, you are a main, well, Scottish Power Group, you know, main sponsor of the event. Are there things that you're particularly looking forward to that the company are going to be involved in or running or doing?
Again, there's a sort of panacea of things that we're trying to do, but picking up, you know, the themes we've been working over the last few years, you know, Frank Mitchell, Keith Anderson have been working with the communities that we serve. So one of the things that we'll host in our city is we will be bringing the metro mayors from Andy Burnham and Steve Rotherham from Manchester and Liverpool together with people like Susan Aitken from Glasgow. So we'll bring those local city leaders together in a debate about what net zero means within the communities that will be facilitated within our headquarters. Jonathan Brearley is coming along to take part in that. I think that's great. It's brave of him as well, because there will no doubt will be a pressure on the regulator as well as the businesses to change. So that's going to be a great event where we'll have a discussion. So at the other end of the spectrum, the Blue Light Brigade, whether it's the police service, the fire service, or the ambulance service, the spotlight will be on their network, like us. They are looking to transform their petrol and diesel vehicles very quickly, toot sweet within the footprint of COP26 in both Edinburgh and Glasgow, and we're providing the capacity on our grid that will make that happen. You know, again, a tangible example of where we're putting money in to try and make sure that the grid is ready to support the transition within a key emergency service fleet as well to support their ambitions. So we'll be facilitating better, stronger discussions amongst the communities that we serve and that we're embedded within. And we'll also be helping key services actually be ready for COP26. A really exciting period. There's lots of sponsorship. The company as a whole has been a long-standing sponsor of cancer research. And there are a number of debates that will also bring mental health, well-being in general, society, into the discussion about net zero. And we sometimes forget that these things are all linked in the integrated society that we work within as well. So very proud of the company's sort of leading position with respect to sponsoring this and stepping up. Some would say it's inevitable. I don't think it is inevitable that a company in the footprint just goes ahead and does this. I'm proud of the work that Keith and Frank are doing from the top all the way down into our engineers that will be making themselves available 24/7 to keep the lights on during the fortnight that COP's in town.
We're going to go into kind of quick fire section. Do you think big wind or small local solar is the best clean energy solution?
Oh, cracking question. You know, I think inevitably the people that will determine that are the customers in our grid. I guess what I would say to nail this one is it needs to be rationalised, it needs to be proportionate, it needs to be coordinated, but we need to make use of all of the available technologies as we move towards delivering net zero.
Hydrogen or electric for your next vehicle purchase?
You know, it's electric for me. I believe electricity is the way forward. I'm not ruling out hydrogen having a role in our economy. Clearly, our group is looking at what role that it can have. But when I look at the improving performance of electric vehicles and I look at the forward cost curves of them and you look at what's beginning to come in the market, we can see the importance it will have in allowing us to electrify transport, get those emissions off the road, but also in local jobs and securing those for the future. So electricity, the answer for me.
Okay, Scott, for your next home energy improvement, would it be more insulation, a heat pump, or an EV charger?
The next thing is electric heat.
Regulatory carrot or a policy stick to really make things happen?
I fundamentally believe that incentives do work. I've seen that within my own business. The quality of service mechanism that the regulator introduced allowed companies to realise incentives and then reinvest that in the grid and on innovation. And we saw a 40% reduction in terms of customer interruptions and customer service impacts over a relatively short period of time within the distribution networks. But not to lose sight of the policy, what I would like is much better clarity. I think we need a blueprint out of government as to the future that will deliver against what the Climate Change Committee are recommending. And there needs to be clear commitment towards that. That needs to join up with a regulator who's empowered and instructed to deliver against those net zero objectives.
Excellent. Thank you, Scott. We're going to move on. And this is the final question before we wrap up. You mentioned Smarter Grid Solutions earlier. You know as well, you know, we're doing work with your company. We wondered if you had a piece of advice, you know, what we can do to fulfill the climate mission here. You know, what's the best thing we could turn our attention to or invest our time in to help this energy transition?
I'm indirectly very proud of Smart Grid Solutions because it kind of is a case in point and real evidence of the multiplier effect in terms of jobs and opportunities that can be created through the transition to net zero. You have created jobs within the local footprint in the city that I'm proud to live in, and you've done that in conjunction in a way that's symbiotic with our business as well. You know, the simple message from me is keep doing what you're doing. We need to make sure that we can turn what you're producing but into a cost-effective, rapidly deployable solution as well. So I think we both need to work harder in that area in being able to turn the wonderful ideas and the software and hardware that we're developing into something that's also cost-effective very quickly. But that also requires some of the changes I've alluded to in the regulatory frameworks to allow us to get that economy of scale through the rollout of it. That's why I pointed at the ED2 plan. You know, I've got very big ambitions to 30 managed zones across our network covering nearly 3 gigawatts of bedded capacity. To put that in context, that's pretty much equivalent to the maximum demand that would be placed on any one of our major distribution networks. So that's a pretty amazing challenge. You guys have been part of that. Keep doing what you're doing, but doing more cost-effectively, of course, as well.
Thank you very much, Scott. This has been an excellent discussion. We could go on for some time on a number of those topics. We're not going to. We just want to close by saying a big thank you to you. We know your time is precious. It's very much appreciated. We certainly take on board, you know, what you said with regards, you know, Smart Grid Solutions and this search for digital, flexible, smart, clean energy solutions. So thank you for that.
And thank you to you, Graeme, for inviting me onto this and giving me this platform.
You've been listening to the Smart Green Energy Transition podcast, exploring the challenges and innovations in the net zero carbon transition. Our guest was Scott Matheson, Director of Planning and Regulation at SB Energy Networks. The presenters were Graeme Ault and Ben Curley. The producer was Natasha Barbieri. Until next time, thanks for listening.